China and U.S. trade negotiators meet again today. We'll look at one big idea being floated. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The United States and China are hard at it, trying to work out a trade agreement that would avert U.S. sanctions and Chinese counter-sanctions. People connected with negotiations have been floating some ideas to the media. The New York Times, CNN, and others this morning say Chinese officials could offer to cut the U.S. trade deficit sharply by agreeing to buy a pile of U.S. stuff, perhaps $200 billion worth a year. Let's get a sense of scale here by turning to Seth Carpenter, Managing Director and Chief U.S. economist at UBS. He's a former Treasury Department official.
The $200 billion reel is a huge number with respect to the U.S. economy and with respect to the U.S. trade balance with China. So we've seen a pattern with these negotiations where a number gets leaked initially. It sounds big, and then over time it gets reduced. That was, for example, the case with the trade tariffs that were going to be in place. Initially, the numbers that were first reported were much bigger.
Now, back to the $200 billion number. If China is earnest in pledging this, I mean, what does it mean? I guess it would mean that they would buy more Boeings and fewer airplanes, and they would buy more soybeans produced by U.S. farmers. It would be quite a task to come up with $200 billion.
Yeah, so the number itself is very large vis-a-vis the U.S. economy, vis-a-vis the U.S. Trade balance. But the time frame is going to matter as well. So there's a lot of discussion about possible increased U.S. exports, for example, of natural gas. The U.S. is a big petroleum producer. One byproduct of a lot of that production is natural gas. The Chinese are trying to shift their production of energy towards cleaner sources, and natural gas could be part of that. That's not a proposition for 2018 or probably even 2019, but over time, with some changes in regulation and some increased investment in infrastructure to export natural gas, you could imagine that being another venue. But again, getting all the way up to $200 billion, the time frame is going to matter a lot.
We know it's part of a negotiation. Is that number going to be reduced? Question one.
Absolutely. Second, and this for me gets to the issue that I have with the administration's looking at bilateral trade deficits in a very simplistic manner. Are we just going to see a diversion of trade, take the existing trade patterns and to make the bilateral trade deficit with China go down? Are we just going to see a shifting either of exports instead of coming directly from China to the U.S., going through a third country to the U.S., or maybe some of what the U.S. ships to the rest of the world just going to China? That doesn't change anything fundamentally, but it would make that simple bilateral number get smaller.
And you sometimes see that pattern with China trade via South Korea to the U.S.
Absolutely. So China has an extensive supplier chain and producer chain, and you could imagine a diversion that would make the reported number smaller that wouldn't change anything that's fundamental.
Seth Carpenter is Managing Director and Chief U.S. Economist at UBS. He used to work at the Treasury Department. Mr. Carpenter, thank you very much.
David, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Now, the news agency Reuters has China denying it would promise that $200 billion of U.S. buying. Economists point out that any U.S. trade deficit is about either the U.S. wanting to consume more than it produces or, in part, an expression of the federal government borrowing internationally. And the trend in Washington this year has been for a lot more borrowing. Let's do the numbers. The 100 share index in London is down 0.2%, but Dow and Nasdaq futures are up 0.2%. Interest rates, the 10-year yield is up at 3.11%. You say you don't pay a 10-year yield? Well, there's also news today. Mortgage rates this last week, mortgage rates hit a 7-year high. Things can be tough on many farms, even before new threats of Chinese tariffs on U.S. farm produce, such as soybeans. For instance, Western Wisconsin led the nation in farm foreclosures last year. More than 450 dairy farms in the state went out of business. And among those still hanging on, many farmers are using their land as collateral against loans to keep operating, as Zoe Sullivan reports.
So we'll start the tour here in the heart and soul of the farm in our milking parlors.
Corey Brown was born and raised on this dairy farm in Wisconsin. His family has a herd of 500 dairy cows. He says he's been losing money for the past few years, and now the price of milk is not keeping up with his production costs. Farm debt is at record levels across the country, but so is land value, which is helping farmers like Brown stay afloat.
We basically are operating by making what payments we can and borrowing money. Luckily, in our area, land values are fairly substantial, so we can use that as collateral on loans.
With low commodity prices and high production costs, Brown is afraid he may have to sell some of the land. And that's something he doesn't want to do, because his family has been farming here for generations. The USDA reports that real estate makes up approximately 80% of all farm assets. But after increasing in value during the first part of the century, farm real estate prices have tapered, just as farm incomes have dipped, along with commodity prices.
You can easily start putting together a scenario where things fall apart pretty quickly.
John Newton is an economist at the American Farm Bureau Federation, a nonprofit organization that aims to help farming become more profitable.
If indeed we do have another year of poor commodity prices, the debt service ratio, the amount of production that farmers need to service their debt, is rising.
Corey Brown's family owns 330 acres. If things don't turn around, he says they're more likely to sell the cows than they are to sell the land. But that could happen too. In Madison, Wisconsin, I'm Zoe Sullivan for Marketplace.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Our engineer is Brian Allison. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.